Hi, I'm Jordan Reynolds. I'm from Auckland, New Zealand. I race in the 12 to 16 125 class. I love racing because I get to challenge myself and I'm continuously learning.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the podcast. I'm your host, Barry Moore. My next guest has 15 years experience of off-road, from trials to hard enduro, not only as a competitor, but also as an instructor and mentor too. Born in the mythical town of Glen Maggie, he was destined to hear the call of trials competition. Two older brothers to chase, he was born to race. In March 2021, in a medical emergency, at a race that stopped everyone dead in their tracks. The next 60 days, the race world followed along, waiting for the words, "It will all be okay." Now back at it in full swing, getting ready to host the GOAT, Graham Jarvis, at his ranch in Southern Australia. Coming up next, this is Tim Coleman. To and from a track. So, like, they're not.
Yeah, true. That's right. That's when most people listen to podcasts, really, don't they?
Yeah, that's for sure. So, we've tried a lot. So, I really do appreciate the effort on your side being 18 hours ahead. It's kind of hard for us to find the sweet spot to talk.
Yeah, that's it. A long way down under.
Yeah. One of the questions I want to talk about, you grew up on or live on pretty well Australia's enduro or trials mecca. Was it Glen Maggie?
Like, yeah,
a single trials guy I know from down under will speak of Glen Maggie like it's the spot. So
that, like, yeah, it's really cool. Like, I was very lucky to grow up in such a cool area for motorbike riding. We host a trials event here every once a year in at Easter time. Yeah. So the place where I am in Australia, it's like at the bottom of Australia, a place called Victoria, the state of Victoria. And we're sort of maybe about 3 hours from the major city, Melbourne.
Okay.
So, it's very much out in the countryside. So it's like, perfect spot to go dirt bike riding and motor trials riding and all that sort of stuff. And, you know, this area is, they call it Gippsland, okay. Like the region kind of thing. And a lot of motorbike riders around here.
Nice. It's also sort of like the setting of the TV series Underbelly, Victoria.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. For sure.
It was kind of like I don't know when that came out. But I know when it did come out, you guys weren't allowed to watch it until the trials were over and everything. Pretty
soon. That's right. Yeah, I remember that now. Yeah.
So is your, like, are you the first person in your family to be into motorsports, or is it like your dad and everyone else?
Like my dad was, he just always was into motorbikes. Yeah. He competed, but he was never like a serious sort of racer or anything like that. Just did it for fun. And I've got two older brothers, and when I grew up on the farm, we all rode motorbikes, and I guess being the younger child, you sort of always want to be better than them.
Yeah.
Be brothers. And I think, you know, that's kind of cool, like to always have something to sort of try and work towards. And it's always good to ride with a better rider, you know, like sort of the family's always sort of been supportive and stuff. So they just love motorbikes, but they've never been pushy or anything like that.
Well, I think that's key. Like, I found most people who have been successful at it were never really pushed or forced. They just sort of pulled to it by gravity.
Yeah, for sure. And I guess living out in, like, the countryside is, like, there's not many distractions, you know. Like, growing up, you know, the nearest town's, like, I don't know, 20 minutes away, and the next major town's, like, almost an hour away. So it's not like you could always go and hang out and just, you know, just go down the streets and stuff like that. You're always here. So it's sort of like, it sort of helps, like, if you just want to ride bikes, you know?
Yeah,
so
I get that.
Yeah.
We have a little spot behind our place, sort of the same setting. Major town is an hour and a half drive away, or hour 20. And, then the next closest city, like the whatever city, I guess, would be like 20 minutes away. Like, so
yeah, cool. Yeah, right. So it's pretty similar, eh?
Yeah, town of 400. So it's not that, like, yeah. So when did someone recognize that you had a gift? Because like you're a gifted rider, man. Like did anybody recognize that in you, or was it just?
I don't think anybody really recognized it. I think it was just like, it's just a natural progression where you sort of just get better at, you know, competitions and results, and it takes you more places. And it's sort of just, it's just a slow sort of process, really, I guess you call it. So, and I just kept at it. And I think that's probably one of the biggest things, like as a rider, like growing up, a lot of riders will maybe very talented, but they just give it up, you know?
Yeah.
And I think if you stick at it, that's where it's going to, you know, pay off.
You get past that sort of plateau and find a new.
Yeah, that's up. Right. Yeah, for sure.
So you do a lot of coaching. I ask this a lot because like a lot of the riders I speak to, they coach, right? So, and I feel like it's the easiest way for you guys to keep funding your habit.
That's right. Yeah, pretty much. You know, I feel like, you know, the coaching's been my main sort of source of income, because I know if I just got a normal job, I guess a normal job, whatever you call that, you sort of probably would be, I don't know, less likely to be sort of doing so much motorbike stuff. Like it's a good excuse to get out on the bike, coach riders, make video, make content and stuff like that. So it's a good way to, it kind of makes you feel like you're, you know, a professional in a way, you know, riding motorbikes for a living. It's pretty cool.
That is pretty cool. You do produce a lot of content. So do you find yourself, struggling for ideas or anything, or is it just like there's always something to go to?
No, I sometimes do struggle with ideas. I think I think like I've done pretty much everything on the farm here, so I just need to there's always things you can do and improve, but I always like sort of brainstorm ideas of what I can do on the motorbike. Yeah. Always coming up with ideas and things like that, and it's just a lot trying to find like someone to film half the time. That's because a lot of the times you'll be riding by yourself and stuff, like training on your own, and then you're like, oh, I really just need someone to just film this section right now. So you do a lot of cool stuff, but you never get it on camera half the time.
Have you thought about setting up a bunch of trail cameras or getting yourself a drone?
Yeah, for sure. Like I actually want to get one of those things where you just put it on the tripod and the camera just follows you around.
Okay.
Yeah. So I like, because a lot of the times, like, I'll just be riding by myself down the paddock after a clinic or something, you know, I can just set the tripod up and I can just bust out a trick. And because sometimes it takes me like freaking a million goes to get something cool.
Yeah.
Someone holding the camera gets pretty sick of it.
I bet you. Well, yeah. There's a fella here. That's what he does. He's always roping people into going for a ride with him. And he makes them stop, like, I need you to hold the camera right now. He's like, he does his little thing, and then if it's a success, it's not such a burden. But if it's a failure, he's just like, oh man, I feel like a pain in the ass. But
like, yeah, I know, because you can see that on their face, they're like, I'm freaking over this. Yeah. Can you just land it already?
So who gets there first then? Like, is it your camera person or yourself who's just like, oh man, I gotta land this? Like, who's putting more pressure?
I think you're putting more pressure on yourself for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because you're just like, I know this guy's like sick of this camera. I've got to land this trigger right now.
Yeah. And there's like hundreds of memes out there, like me doing with nobody watching, and it's just like perfect. And then as soon as there's an audience, like complete fail. Right. Like, so. Oh,
100%. Yeah. Yeah. When the camera's out, it just changes these sort of dynamics a little bit, because it's kind of good. It feels like there's a crowd watching, even though it's just a bloody camera.
Yeah, but I mean, that lens is attached to thousands of people now, right?
Oh, like, that's right. That's what you got to remember. Yeah.
Yeah. It could be, you could just do something silly and then someone uploads it. And it's.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You can't get away with much these days.
No, it's like during the pandemic, I guess Graham Jarvis was filming himself farting around in the backyard and crashing through his shed. Sending a million followers like in just a couple of days. So
it's amazing. You
know, yeah. It's success is not always the path to fame, I guess.
That's true.
So I mean you were a trials
competitor and then an enduro competitor as well.
Mm-hmm.
And, when you went to your first like big deal trials one, or even the Easter event that you guys host, and it was like your debut, were you nervous or was just like, I got this, like you're so practiced?
Well, I think with trials, it's like you sort of obviously start the sort of the low end and then you sort of build up to it.
Okay.
So like with trials, you never jump up right into that top spot because you just naturally, you sort of work your way up through the ranks.
Okay.
And yeah, now it's sort of like, all right, I've sort of got to the point where there's no excuses why not I can't win these events and things. So yeah, so sort of being at your home property too, you're like, I've got to win this.
Yeah, that's the thing, eh? Hometown boy and all that. Are there any like challenges in trials that when you see them on the course, they sort of like make you rethink your decision of signing up that day?
Some, usually pretty keen to have a crack at most things, you know, like I'll try anything really. Some stuff, if the section setters set something a little bit dangerous, then you're always going to like probably, you know, question it a lot more. So there's a limit to what, you know, is achievable and, you know,
that's true. And then I guess I am curious, like, being in Oz, like you've competed around the world. So how do you fund that? Like, where do you start looking for, like, if you're going to go out racing this year, where do you start looking for events? Are they just going to be in Oz, or are you going to try like, FIM or any of that kind of stuff?
Yeah. So I've done a lot of races all over the joint, all over the world and everything. If I want to race, I'll usually go over and do a coaching clinic.
Okay.
Over in, you say, Europe or whatever. People will always sort of want you to, I don't know, like it's the beauty of like doing the clinics. You can travel to these countries and do a week of coaching, covers the costs of flying over there and stuff like that. And so that's pretty much how I pay for my way to do these sort of events. Yeah.
And how do you set up a clinic? Like, do you reach out to clubs in an area, or do you just like on Instagram, I'm going to be in Alberta, do you want to come see me ride?
Usually it's like people contact me and stuff like that. So it's been pretty fortunate enough to have met people throughout the years where I can go back to these guys and stuff like that. So, you often have requests to go to places like in Thailand, Asia.
Oh, wow.
So just over the years, just you meet people and stuff like that. So, there's always, it's just like how much traveling you want to do, though. But I guess it's a job. So, you sort of, you know, most of the time it's done on the farm here because it's very convenient for me, I guess.
You know, just go out front and then there you go.
Yeah, that's right.
So, of all the places you get to go to, where do you like to go back the most?
I think like regards to countries and stuff, I don't know, like they're all awesome. Like most of the places are really, really good. Just the people are very, in every country I've been to, like they're just always motorbike people are very relatable, you know?
Yeah, I feel.
No, it doesn't matter what country you are in, they're always, you know, it's just motorbikes and stuff like that. So, it's just like, I don't say I've got a favorite, but it's always nice to come home. You know what I mean? Like you do. Yeah. So I think it's, but it is, I think it's important for everybody to do a bit of traveling, you know, like, and see the world a bit because it makes you appreciate what you got, you know?
I think so. Visiting home as a tourist, is a nice way to go, but you can't even appreciate it until you've been other places. Like,
oh, for sure. Yeah. Like, I've done a bit in like some Asian countries before where you just like, you know, these people are just on the streets trying to sell stuff on the sideline and, you know, little markets and things and little shelters. And you're just like, man, these guys got it tough, you know?
Yeah. It's a hard life.
Yeah.
So Yeah, I guess, like, I know everybody's going to want to know about your unfortunate accident or what have you during the enduro race in March 2021. But like, we can talk about that later, if at all. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm open now. I'll talk about it. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, we'll cut to that. That was a pretty big deal. Like, you try some nutty stuff on a bike, right? So like, if you're going to get hurt on a bike, most also expect the motorcycle to be the biggest contributing factor. And in this case, it was like, just like heat stroke or exhaustion or combination of all those things. Is that something that happens because you push yourself? Like, what was your schedule like back then?
Well, that's the thing. Like, I've been fortunate enough to never really have a serious accident on the motorbike, or any sort of really injury on the motorbike. So I guess you think that's the last thing on your mind is like heat stroke or heat exhaustion or just pushing your body to the extreme. You know, obviously everybody feels that, you know, when they're in hot conditions and stuff, it's exhausting and things like that. And you just sort of, you know, you get by, you know, you might rest for a little bit and you sort of get by, but this thing was like this heat stroke. That's what it's what it came down to, but it's quite, obviously it's very serious heat stroke. It can be like deadly, but what's the scary part is I wasn't expecting it. I probably didn't have the best preparation leading up to that race.
Yeah.
It was very hot. I was doing, clinics and stuff like that leading up to it. Drove all the way up there with like the air conditioning didn't work in the car. So I was really probably that lead up wasn't ideal.
Okay.
And I went into the race like just, you know, typical, I'm gonna win this, you know.
Yeah.
As you do. And I like, I guess that's the competitive side of me, you know, like I'm just like, I'm gonna give it my all. And yeah, I think it's just like when I was reading in, I did a lot of research after, you know, this is when I finally got out of hospital and stuff. I had time to like read all about heat stroke and, you know, the doctors, they were still bamboozled. They tested me for everything, snake bites, you know, spider bites, happened.
I guess Australia.
Yeah, well, that's it. You know, you never know. Like, I think... because I was just doing some really weird stuff on the motorbike. I don't remember the day.
Okay.
It was about an hour and a half into the race.
Yeah.
And I started at the sort of mid pack and I worked my way up to the front and I was leading at that stage, apparently. I don't remember, but, and then I just started just doing, that's when the signs, and I probably ignored the signs and, you know, where I was just like, people said I wasn't myself. Like I was riding into like trees and stuff like that. I was revving my bike excessively just over the smallest rock. They ended up finding me like with the bike on top of me on this little gully thing and sort of must have been like a little bit unconscious and stuff. So that's when, and it was quite remote where the event was.
Yeah.
And a lot of bushes and stuff, and there's no like spectators around. So I was sort of in the middle of nowhere, and I guess I was lucky to have some riders stop and, you know, find me, and they sort of knew something wasn't right. They cancelled the race.
Yeah.
Because, they didn't have enough medical services there in case someone else hurt themselves. So all eyes were on me. So everybody came up, they were waiting for the helicopter because they knew shit was going bad.
Yeah.
They said, oh, what do we do? Do we just take him to the hospital? And one of the guys is like, you need a helicopter. You need to get this helicopter now. So they got the helicopter, rescue helicopter came. But it came and then it went back because they had to get they dropped a few like nurses and stuff and doctors down to me.
Okay.
And then the whole helicopter had to go back and get refueled. And, yeah, they sort of – so what did they do? They sort of – did all their work on me, and some of these doctors and things were part of the military or some military services, and they're just like, you have to get this guy out of here like right now. So yeah. They tubed me when I was down on the ground, so they put a breathing tube in me and stuff. And my temperature was just like through the roof. And I guess that's what happens with heat stroke. You know, your temperature just keeps rising.
Yep.
Your body starts to shut down, like everything shuts down. So you're like, all your internals, they just start slowing right down. My blood sugar levels were like zero. Oh. So yeah. So they couldn't get a good reading on the blood level sugars or whatever. So and then they, yeah, rushed me to the hospital, the Gold Coast hospital. So that's like up near Queensland at the top of Australia.
Yeah. Wow.
So spent 2 weeks like in a coma, and it was really touch and go for a while. Like, you know, it's probably not a good sign when the family's there and they're getting invited in to have a meeting with the doctors and stuff like that, probably saying, you know, things are looking bad. But fortunately enough, I woke up out of that coma like 2 weeks later, and that was such a weird feeling, you know, like, holy shit, like what that was a weird dream.
I imagine like 2 weeks of just sleep, like
I think it's not like proper sleep too, it's just like you're on this like trip, you know what I mean, like you're just like, you got that much, the doctors give you that much stuff to keep you under or whatever. And you just like,
it was a medically induced coma. No, you didn't.
Yeah. Medically induced. Yeah. Yep. So, I just remember some of the dreams. Like I was just like, man, I was like living in space half the time.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So it was like, gives you these really vivid dreams, you know?
Is there any that stand out, like that you can share? Because I guess they're not too twisted.
Yeah, like I remember, like I was in a spaceship, you know, like in a spaceship, and I hijacked the spaceship, and I knew something wasn't right because I'm like, I just need to end this. Whatever's going on, I'm gonna crash this freaking spaceship. So I was I remember I was flying over Australia, and I'm like, all right. I'm just going to crash land this spaceship in Australia and hopefully I can wake up or whatever. Okay. But they wouldn't let me. They wouldn't let, some reason there was like, this sounds really whack, but there was like restrictions. We couldn't fly around Australia. So I had to fly somewhere else, like Japan or something like that. And then I went across the Antarctic Ocean. I went to like some snow field, and they were just going to toss me out of the middle of nowhere. They just like, they just wanted to toss me out of the ocean. Oh man. And it's just like went on and on, all these sort of dreams, like everybody was after me, you know?
Okay. So you kind of
What's that?
Imprisoned in a way.
Yeah. 100%. Like I was on the run. Like, everything was trying to be like survival mode. And, you know, like I remember I was trapped under the ocean in like a big box.
Okay.
I had to escape it. And everything was just like this battle to just survive, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, metaphorically, in reality, it was.
I guess that's true. Yeah. Like that's probably your fighting you, you know?
Yeah. It's like, and if you had just gone along, maybe we wouldn't be talking right now.
Well, that's right. I remember some like people trying to like just pin me down, and I was just fighting my way off them, you know. And I remember they're like, "Oh, he's a feisty one." I'm just like, he's not, you know, he's not giving up. And I'm like, yeah, well, shit. Maybe if you just didn't, you know, maybe that's where, you know, it could have been different.
Yeah, like I mean, it's all a mystery. None of us understand how it works, right? Like,
well, that's it. Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you pulled through. Because like literally, I don't know if you're familiar with the Dirt Bike Burrito Boys, and so I had them on as a guest around that time, and then they turned me on to Grassroots on Enduro, and so I start following them, and then it's just like the very next event is this event, right? Like, and I was just like, so we were talking, like I was talking with them as much as a guy could from over here, right? Like just follow up, make sure you're okay and that kind of stuff. But nobody knew, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah, no one really knew. Like everybody was, it was a bit of a mystery of like how I'd wake up, you know?
Yeah.
Whether or not like I'd recognize anyone. So that was always probably like a worrying thing, you know? If like, no, I guess that's all part of it. You just don't know how you're going to turn out like when you wake up. But I sort of remembered like the first time I woke up, I was sort of, she was like, the nurse was like, oh, you've been in hospital for 2 weeks. You came in by helicopter. And I just remember I couldn't speak, but I was just shaking my head. I just, because I'm like, I've never been in a helicopter before. This isn't right.
That's crazy. For your wife, then, it was pretty scary.
Yeah, I think for everybody it was very scary. And, you know, the parents and everybody, my brothers and stuff like that. Yeah, because what happens was like I woke up and everything was cool. And then, you know, maybe a week later they went to take my tube out, like my breathing tube.
Okay.
And some shit went bad there. Like my diaphragms didn't, like in your lungs or whatever, they were not doing their thing.
Okay.
So that was a panic moment. So for a minute I wasn't breathing and stuff like that. So they had to quickly like put the tube back in.
Oh.
And then I was like back in an induced coma for a bit after that again. So I was sort of in and out of all these sort of induced coma things. And and then I just remember that breathing tube was just so horrible to have in your mouth.
I could imagine.
All I wanted to do was just like drink some water. And I just, the thought of drinking water was just like the best thing on earth, I reckon. Like, you know, you see your nurses and stuff and they're just like drinking their waters and you're just like trapped in your body. And you're just like, man. Yeah.
The water was like the thing. Hey, like.
It was just like, you know, like when I finally got that tube out, oh my God. And I finally got to have a drink of water, or I wasn't water at first. It was like ice chips. They call it like just little.
Oh yeah. Fucking, yeah.
Yeah, whatever.
Shaped ice.
And like I started using that and that was just like the best thing in the world.
Okay. And then after, like, I remember the images of you coming out of the, not actually out of the hospital, but I remember when you were giving us like a kind of like a thank you update or all that kind of stuff. And then you're showing like you'd lost all that weight and you were starting to fight. Like
I was like, it looked like I was in like some sort of concentration camp or just prisoner of war. Like I lost so much weight and I had stages in when I was in hospital where I'd like get really kind of like fat almost, like I was bloated almost. So,
okay. So
I went through a lot of these sort of stages. I guess that's with your body. That's all part of it. And but I really struggled. And this is another reason I went back into a coma because I couldn't eat really for a few days. Like it was just such a struggle, you know. So it was so difficult to get food in. So they had to put a feeding tube in that goes up your nose.
Yeah,
that's why I had the dangling thing going on. But yeah, they just had to feed me through that for a long, long time. And I was sort of like, nervous to get off that thing because I knew once you're off that thing, you have to sort of force yourself to eat food. So that was a real big struggle. So putting the weight, like, you know, sort of similar to where I was, but took a long time. Like I lost so much weight and just being able to move, like that was the hardest thing in the world. Just sitting up out of that hospital bed.
Yeah. And did you lose, like, it's going to sound weird, but did you lose skills like eating and drinking?
Oh, yeah, man. Like, I had to, like, learn how to sort of do all that stuff again, you know, like just pour a glass of water. It was so hard to do.
Oh, wow. Like, that's full rehabilitation, like from.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. I had to sort of do like all these little rehab things for a long time. You know, just learning to like walk sort of thing. I didn't really lose like the knowing how to do it. It's just like my body was just that weak.
Just building the muscle back. Yeah.
just get that muscle back. You know, I was using like my iPhone to like do weights in the hospital.
Okay.
You know, to me, the iPhone felt so freaking heavy.
I just, like, yeah, that's what I'm holding in my hand.
I can,
there's enough weight in there though. So,
well, that's it. Yeah. Yeah. So it's just stuff to keep yourself occupied in hospital.
You rehabbed, like, how long was it from the hospital to the bike?
I reckon it was like maybe March, April, May, June. I reckon it was about 4 or 5 months. I reckon I got back onto the bike, and just like, this was when I say got back on the bike, this was like well and truly not ready, but I just wanted to see.
That's fair. Like, but and what did you do? Just like
I was like a C grader. Like, I couldn't do much at all. It was like just riding around in the backyard doing circles and stuff.
Okay.
And then, yeah, and then I knew, like, all right, cool, I can at least do the clutch and throttle and stuff and all that sort of thing.
Yep.
And that was cool. Like, what I struggled with was my shoulders a lot, because sitting in bed for so long, my shoulders came forward a lot, so I didn't have much movement in my shoulders.
Okay.
So I really struggled with like bike movements and things like that. So I sort of just didn't rush anything, and it was probably, I don't know, another few months. So it was probably a good like sort of 10 months off the bike, really.
Okay. And then like, I guess 10 months. So it was like 10 months, and then you could do, like, you have a nice loop behind your house. Like, there's the, your course, your track.
Yeah. It was probably like, I wasn't getting into that stuff. I was just more or less just getting back to wheelies and all that sort of little things. And it was only on the trials bike. I never got back onto the enduro bike much.
Okay.
The trials was probably the best sort of thing for me to just ease my way back into riding.
Yeah, I imagine, because it's like home and like,
yeah. And it's lighter, and I was a weakling, so it's just easy to just, you know, just maneuver, I guess, or just ride in general.
And then have you raced since then?
Yeah, so I've done like a couple of races now. Okay. Yeah, so like, the plan was never to sort of rush back into racing.
I didn't think so.
No, not like sort of after all that. And it was, so I was sort of like, I just wanted to be fully prepared. And I did a race like at the end of the year, like this or whatever, last year now. So that was cool to do that. And, you know, I could prove that I could, you know, still do all right. So that was cool.
That's all right. And then, so this whole thing, like, if you could go back and do everything differently, the lead up, I guess, is where you would have made your changes. Also getting the air conditioning fixed in your truck.
100%. Yeah. Like, I think preparation is probably the best, the key, you know?
Yeah.
Going in with like a relaxed mindset, you know, like not stressing about what you're going to come or whatever. It's just like, yeah, you're riding your bike, and that's probably where I screwed up, you know, like, you just got to just relax a bit more when you're doing competitions. And I probably get a little bit uptight with like wanting to do well and stuff. So now I sort of, you just go in there and whatever happens, happens. And you just got to listen to your body, you know?
Yeah.
If you're feeling a bit funny, then just chill, just relax. And it's not worth it.
Yeah. But I mean, that's the, I don't know, wisdom that you paid for, I guess. Like,
no, yeah, far out. It took a while to realize that. Hey,
yeah, but I find a lot of guys like get really focused on the podium, and they forget about the rest of the riding, right? Like,
yeah, I know, yeah.
And there's guys like me that don't focus enough on it, so that's why we never touch the podium. But like,
yeah. But I mean, that's we envy you guys, you know, because you guys just can go out and just, I don't know. Sometimes it's not like, sometimes you just got to realize, like, am I actually having fun at this race? You know what I mean? Like, yeah. This is actually fun. I think I'm having fun. When you're pushing your bike up this gnarly hill, you're just like, Yeah. Well, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's the most miserable kind of fun.
That's cool. That's the reward you like, you know, just getting to that, getting up that hill or to that finish line, just achieving, you know, whatever you can, really.
Yeah, exactly. So I guess going back to like you being like doing the clinics and things, other people, by the time this airs, I've asked this question or a series of questions to a number of people. So the thing most people would advise is riders show up with their bike set up for them, so that when you guys start riding, you can just start once you get there. Past that kind of thing, is there any advice you could give people for when they're arriving or getting ready for races? Because I guess we'll do that for you. Just based off of like the like hydrating and being cool and whatever in a hot environment like you're in.
Yeah, like I try and like educate riders about, you know, the preparation side of things when it comes to events and even just coaching clinics. Like say I've got a rider coming, I'll send him an email and I'll just tell him, like, make sure you're feeling, you know, it's going to be a hot day when we're doing this coaching clinic. So make sure you hydrate leading up to it. Yep. And, you know, prepare your bike as best you can before, you know, the day. Just because, you know, some riders don't ride for a long time and they come out to one of my coaching clinics and their bikes hasn't been started in a while. So it's just like, I just try and get riders to be as prepared as they can. And yeah, the same for me, if I did a race or something like that, I just want to make sure I'm going in with good preparation.
So after everything, the community really came around for you. How was that? Yeah. How did that feel?
Oh, it was amazing. Like, it was just so, yeah, like surreal, really. Like, it was amazing to see the support, you know, from all the riders around the world and everything like that. Like, I was blown away, to be honest, really blown away.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like, you go through the list. Like, I mean, there's a few ways people could send help to you. Like, some of the organizations had like auctions or buy a shirt for, you know, and all that. And then like direct donation. But like, there's hundreds of names of people who were like there for you a little bit at a time, some in big numbers, whatever. But like, whatever it was in my mind is there 100%, right? Like, so they were there. Yeah.
They were, you know, and just like people were like, you know, just hearing this, I always hear more things like now that I'm like recovered and stuff like that. But, you know, yeah, you meet people, you know, that you don't even really know. And they were like praying for you and stuff like that. So that's probably actually more special than anything, you know, just like I don't know, people come together when shit gets real, you know?
Yeah. It's, I don't know if there's a lot of communities like that. Like, it seems to be a common theme through my podcast anyway, talking about how the motorcycle community is kind of, aside from the rest of the world. Like, it has its own set of rules, morals and values and support structure, I guess. And just like, once you are a motorcyclist, you're part of a family. And I guess it's that way. Like,
it's so cool. And, you know, now I feel like I want to give back a little bit. So it's like, if someone else was in the same situation, I'd do all I can to help them, you know? So
that's
Yeah.
It's like, and was it one of the dream things there was to get your van fixed? I imagine that's because the air conditioning.
Oh man, I want to burn that van. I've still got it. I don't drive it anymore.
No. Oh no. Just auction it off, man.
Bad vibes, that van. I'm pretty keen to burn the thing.
No, then do that. Auction off the van, the burning of the van, and have somebody come up and you and them can set it ablaze together.
Yeah, that sounds good. We'll go live. We'll video it live.
Make it a big thing. Like, why not? That would be actually a really interesting contest. And I'm sure that like somebody would find it was so much fun they'd had to try to put it to an end to it. But
but yeah, sort of, I got out, I just needed a new van anyway, because that one was getting on, you know, like done a fair few miles or whatnot. So it was time to park it.
Yeah. I've never seen it, but I guess it has kind of a notorious reputation for being derelict.
Yeah, 100%.
I don't know. Is there anything you want to talk about? Like, yeah, what are you doing now? Like, what's your current?
So project? Again, now I'm just sort of like just working on sort of my coaching or schedule for the year. Yeah. So I've got a few writers coming over to Australia, like Mario Ramon. He's okay. coming over, and Graham Jarvis. He's nice. Coming over. He's coming over in March. So I'm sort of managing all the like emails and sorting it all out for him and stuff like that. So yeah, that's kind of keeping me busy at the minute, and just doing stuff like setting up the farm a little bit more for hosting riders and stuff like that, clinics, and just building it like a better place for making it more comfortable for riders, because they travel a long way, and I just want to give them the best experience. So I'm quite often building a lot of tracks and things like that. And on average, I'm sort of coaching maybe three or four days a week.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So this time of year, it's a bit quiet because it's like summer here. Yeah, so it's quite hot.
Okay.
And a lot of people just sort of let the bikes just sort of, I don't know, leave the bikes alone for a little bit. And then they sort of, once the weather sort of cools down a little bit more, then that's when it sort of picks up again. So, so that's sort of like what I do. I ride my mountain bike a fair bit. I love fishing and stuff like that. So, yeah, just like tinkering away at things and being on the farm. There's always something to do, whether in a tractor building tracks or whatnot.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've had a crazy season. It's been like really wet throughout the year. So there's so many friggin' weeds, and like my tracks are just overgrown. So mega. Oh. It's like, yeah, yeah. So I'm trying to like just get out there with a chainsaw and trim them all back.
That's fair. And yeah. I guess you're just not riding often enough if the weeds are growing in where.
Well, that's it. Yeah, yeah, for sure.
That's crazy. So you're going to have the goat out on your farm. That should be good for weed control.
Yeah, that's right. Put him to work, I reckon.
Yeah, I would. Like, why not? He's a quiet guy, so he must like working hard.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, so it should be cool having him.
That's sweet. Yeah, I know. On your Instagram and all that, you seem pretty jazzed about having him come out. And hopefully locally, everybody's sort of excited to play with him.
Like, yeah, I think so. Like, with the name, like, what he's got, it's like, it draws riders all over the world, I guess, and just want to hang out with him.
Yeah, that's fair. And learn how to wheelie.
Yeah, that's right.
For how long will he be there? Like 2 weeks or?
Well, he hasn't told me yet, but he's just given me a weekend date. So and it's still a bit off, and that's why, but you've got plenty of time to work on the
deals. Yeah, yeah. Don't worry. I'm not going to pressure you to say something that can't be unsaid.
Not at all. I've got my own people to coach anyway, so I'm always kept pretty busy with that. So it's cool.
That is cool. Do you have any plans to come to Canada?
Absolutely. Yeah. I've been there. Oh, I've been there once or twice now, and I want to go back for sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Where have you been?
Well, I never went to like the BC like area.
Yeah.
I was on the more the east side, I guess.
Ontario or Nova Scotia.
Yeah. Oh yes. Okay. Yeah, that sort of side. And I did a coaching clinic at what's that place called? It's like where the French speaking place.
Oh, New Brunswick has Quebec is like the French province.
Yeah.
And New Brunswick is like our only official bilingual province.
And then, yeah, right. Yeah. So, my sponsors are, I ride Sherco, so yeah, Sherco Australia.
Yeah.
And I've just got a couple of new sponsors on board, CTO Industries. So they help out with vehicle like wheels and, you know, just like off-road stuff for vehicles and things like that. So they've helped me out, deck my van out, how like pretty cool to be like livable and stuff like that.
Nice.
So they're a huge cool sponsor. And like I've got Mad Mex. It's like a Mexican food chain in Australia. I don't know if you guys would have them over there, but yeah, they're quite big in Australia, so they helped me out a bit. So shout out to those guys. And yeah, and then, well, they're my major sponsors at the minute. So, and I'm not sure what gear and stuff I'll be running next year, so we'll just leave it at I'm not sure what I'll be running, you know. So we'll just see what happens in the next week or so, and then I can thank those guys.
That's awesome. All right, I'll stop recording here right now, and then we can just chat.